Okay, after bringing the three-way machlokes of the rabbis, exactly how they interpret the three times it says they make her drink, and with discussion Rabbi Akiva, do we force her to drink or not? So now we seem to make some differences if she's calm or if she's nervous, and if we really erase the name of Hashem or not. So Gemara now asks the following question. We're going to ask a question in the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. What if the following? Amra, she says, Eini shose machmas priyusa. First she says, I'm not going to drink, and she's calm about it. So according to him, that would already mean she's guilty. Right? He says, why aren't you drinking? What are you afraid of? Right? I'm not afraid, I just don't want to drink. Well, that means it's tantamount to admission. That's what he said. But then she's not done yet. Then the guy's saying, well, you know, as far as we're concerned, it's like you admitted it, your husband's going to divorce you without a ksuva, finished, it's the end of the world. But then she rethinks it over. V'chazer, then she retracts. V'amra, shosani, you know what, I will drink it. First she said, I won't drink it, which according to Rabbi Akiva, that would seem to mean an admission that she's guilty. But then she backtracks and says, you know what, I will drink it. So now the question is, Mao, what are we going to do under the situation? Would we say that we can allow her to drink it willingly or not? Now, there's only a shaila in Rabbi Akiva and not in the other opinions, because as you look in the brackets, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who argues with Rabbi Akiva, he holds a sota's refusal to drink never constitutes an admission of guilt, even if she refuses out of soundness. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then that's fine. She can certainly drink, because he doesn't agree with Rabbi Akiva's position at all on this. The question's in Rabbi Akiva. So here's the two sides of the coin. Side number one is, Kivin Damrei Nishoisa, once she says, I ain't drinking, we've already made the decision. And what she's really saying is, Tmeani Kamra. That's as if she's saying, I've been defiled. I don't want to drink. Why do I want to drink? Must be you're guilty. So it's like we're hearing her say she's guilty. Now, once it's like she says she's guilty, we have a rule. Since she's established herself as being defiled, why? Because she refused to drink it. That's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, once you refuse and you have no reason for it, it's not that she was scared. She's just silent. I'm not drinking it. I don't care. I'm not afraid. I'm not drinking it. That's as if she said, I am defiled. So once she says she's defiled, then guess what? Lo matzeri, you can't retract. For example, I'll give you another case. What if a person, there's a piece of meat in this room, and you say to yourself, you know, I know that piece of meat is treif. How do you know? I just know it is. Now, other people aren't so sure of it. So, and they said, no, as far as we're concerned, it's got a package, it says COR, it says, I know it's treif. Well, everybody else can eat it, but you can't.
Because you can't retract.
Because you said it's treif. Once you said it's treif. That's right. So same thing here. We say, listen, but she did not say the words, I was defiled. She says, I'm not drinking. Which Rabbi Akiva says, well, if you're not drinking, it must be you're defiled. So do we say, it's as if she said defiled, she can't backtrack? Oh, Dilma, maybe look at it the other way. Kiva the Amr shows it, now that she's saying I'll drink afterwards, she's really revealing to us retroactively that the reason why she refused to begin with was the bachvas biususara, because she was agitated. That's why she didn't drink. It's retroactively telling this. In other words, it could be, even though she looked composed, but really there was an inner turmoil going on. Some people are good poker faces. You know, a lot of times, okay, a woman will say, oh, I'm too scared of it. But if the woman just says, I'm not drinking, but she's masking a fear of dying even if she's innocent. How do we know if that's happening? If later she says she'll drink it, then she realized I can't let my fear get the better.
That refutes Rabbi Akiva's position.
That doesn't refute. He only said if she says I'm not drinking. But now she's come back and made a second statement, which Rabbi Akiva never told us anything. What if afterwards she says, I will drink it? That's the question.
But didn't he feel that it must be the case?
But that's only if she hasn't, he says if she refuses to drink, and that's all we hear from her, out of calmness, then we assume she's guilty. But he never said a case, what if afterwards she says, I will drink it? That's the shaila. That's we're not sure. Do we say we go their first words and forget it? She's stuck and she's out? We say, no, she now is retroactively revealing that she really was afraid, but she didn't let us know. That's the Shaila. And of course, what's the answer going to be, guys?
Tekel.
It stands unresolved. Okay, now, one more little fact before we hit the Mishnah. Amar Avuah Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, said the following halacha. Now remember, what are these waters called in the Torah? It says she is made to give to drink blank waters, bitter waters. The question is, how are these waters bitter? Let's look at the ingredients of this water. We have pure water from the Kior. Okay, we have some sand put in it. Sand is not bitter. It's not bitter, right? And we've got some ink in it. Ink. We scratched off the ink. Okay, there's nothing really essentially bitter about the drink. I could say it's a bland drink. It's a boring drink. It's not a tasty drink. But bitter, it's not bitter. Sand is not bitter. It's mixed in water. You could drink sand and water, and you may not be thrilled with it, but it's not bitter.
No, but
it says bitter waters. Bitter waters. Only if she's guilty. If she's innocent, it'll be the sweetest thing in the world for her. We're not talking about philosophically, are they bitter? It says bitter waters. So the father Shmuel says, we got to take the Torah at its word. So therefore, we have to do something to make the waters bitter. So therefore, tzarech she'itein mar letoch ha'mayim. You have to put something bitter into the waters. My taima, what's the reason? D'amar kra, because the pasuk says, mei hamorim. She erases the writing of, listen, excuse me, before the stuff's erased in, the waters are called bitter waters. So it's not even the ink, it's bitter before the ink comes in. So it says, you erase the writing of the scroll into the bitter waters. So what does that mean? Shamarim kvar, they were already bitter before the writing of the scroll was erased. So you don't even have any of that stuff. So now, that's the order. It says you put the ink, you scratch the ink into the bitter waters. So they were already existing bitter waters. So now, were it not for this implication, one could say the Torah calls waters bitter because they have the power to curse her, like Shelley said, not because the taste is bitter. It would have been correct to say like Shelley said. But the problem is, it's before you even put the cursed letters, or the word letters of the curse scratched into the water. But now that we've deduced that the Torah calls them bitter before the writing is erased, it cannot be that they are called bitter because of their power to curse, since they don't have that power before the writing is erased into them. Right, the verse must mean that waters literally taste bitter because something bitter is put into them. Okay, now some explain the reason the Torah commands that a bitter agent put in the water so that the woman's witnessing this will frighten her and induce her to admit her guilt so as to save herself from dying a horrible death, and etc., etc. In other words, if you see he's putting, now it doesn't say what you put in. I mean, what would you say is something bitter? Vinegar?
It's sour.
Well, I think, what's bitter? More? Put some horseradish? Put something bitter in it. So, you know, there's always that fear. You know, sometimes, you know, children don't like to take medicine, even though it's good for them. Even though it's banana-flavored medicine, all these things. But I remember when I was a kid, the medicine we took was terrible. So the fact that it has the bitter taste alone scares her off. Yes, Buckley's cough syrup. Okay.
The stuff you put on the kids' nails to stop them biting the nails. That's good.
Okay. Fine. Okay, we're now up to the next Mishnah. Now the Mishnah discusses a very interesting scenario. What if Ad Shalom Nimcha Kamagila? Let's say we're at the stage where we've written that scroll, we've written that page, the whole section, whatever the section is. We've not yet erased it. Okay? And guess what? Amra, at this point, she says, Eini Shoisa, I'm not going to drink. At that point already. Now, and according to Rabbi Akiva, at least, what does that mean? She's guilty. And at this point, you know, no one's going to force her to drink because we have not etched out Hashem's name. Or, for that matter, I don't know the Mishnah, why does it, what if she says, I'm Tamea? I don't know why the Mishnah doesn't mention that. But the bottom line is, what happens? The question is, are we going to scratch out the letters off of this parchment now. No. She says, I'm not drinking. Right? So she's not drinking. She's not drinking. Now, once we already scratched out the parchment, then everybody seems to agree, at least if it's done with the proper formality, everybody says, we force her to drink it. But here, we haven't scratched out the parchment yet. And we've already seen before that if you haven't scratched it out yet, then we're not going to force her to drink it. Now we have a problem. I have a very nice piece of parchment with four or five psukim written on it. Question is, what do we do with it? Okay, that's an interesting question. What do you do with it? So the answer is Megillasa, and what do we do with that? And what do we do with the mincha? The mincha's already been put into a fancy bowl. So Megillasa nignezes, the scroll is put in Geniza. The scroll is hidden away, just like you have Seamus. It's put like in Seamus. We can't throw it out. We can't use it for anything. Mish is going to talk about that. Hold on. So let's look at the notes here. At this point, her simple refusal to drink, though not actually in the mission of guilt, halts the process. Okay? She remains forbidden to her husband, who must divorce her, and forfeits her ksuva. That's according to everybody. She's not going to drink. That's it. But her scroll, which contains the sacred names and verses, is hidden away at the sides of the sanctuary in the manner of all sacred writings that are no longer usable, which are hidden away so they are not come to be treated in an unseemly fashion. Tosas quotes Yerushalmi to the fact that the scroll is hidden away under the hinges of the sanctuary door. Why? So that it will be worn away by the opening and closing of the door. According to some versions of Rashi, this is the intent as well, as the versions read, Bitsire HaHechel, at the hinges of the sanctuary. Now, here's a problem. The Achronim seek to understand the basis for Yishalmi's allowing the name to be erased through the opening and closing of the door, since the erasure is direct and not merely a grumma, and thus should be not allowed. You're not allowed to erase God's name. Whether they're putting it in the hinges of the door, so we open and close the door after a few weeks, that the parchment cracks, the letters fall apart. Since when can you do that? So it's a whole discussion the Achronim ask about that. So that doesn't give us the answer. All right, anyway. But so anyway, it's put away, number one. Now we have a mincha. We've got the flour that's in the bowl. What happens to that? Well, we can't bring it as a mincha anymore because we're not going through the procedure. Umincha mispazeres ala deshen. Now this is assuming it's already gone into a kli shares, into an administering vessel. We take the flour and we put it into scattered on the ashes on the mizbeach, and it's burnt up. Just straight. We don't do a whole thing. It's just put on the deshen. All right. The Gemara in Tzvachim states that there were three ash heaps on which disqualified or certain other offerings were burnt. One in the temple courtyard, a second on the temple mount outside the temple, and a third outside Jerusalem. Any sacrifice that was confined to the temple would, if disqualified, be burnt on the ash heap that was in the temple courtyard. Hence, the mincha sod had already been sanctified in the kli shares. When the sod refused to drink, the mincha, which could no longer be offered, would be burnt on the ash heap in the temple courtyard. The Mishnah's expression, scattered, refers to its burning. However, what if it wasn't put in the kli shares yet? It could be deconsecrated through redemption. You could redeem it. Once it's in the ministering vessel, it's holy and it's got to be used as a holy thing. But we can't. So what do? We just burn it. Finished. But in the temple area. But what if it was not yet put into the, what do you call it? Wasn't put into a ministering vessel for whatever reason. So therefore we can redeem it. You just redeem it. You use money to exchange for it. And now it goes out and use the money for things of the base of Migdash. A Misha, therefore, must be discussing a mincha that was already sanctified and a kli shares could no longer be redeemed. Now, if the Tana here follows the view of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon, who hold that the sota drinks after her mincha is offered, right? Remember, it's a machlokas. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon says that she has to drink. Once the mincha is offered, she has to drink. Then the Tana here could refer... So what would be the situation where we're scattering the things? Then the Tana here could refer to where the procedure is being carried out according to its normal sequence, and the sota refers to drink after a mincha is sanctified in the kli shares, but before it is offered. According to the rabbis, well, the sota drinks before a mincha is offered, However, the usual procedure does not call for the mincha to be sanctified in Kli Sharis, so it would not apply. So it would not be going according to them. Hence, if this Tana falls to the rabbis, he must refer to the unusual case in which the mincha was prematurely sanctified in the Kli Sharis before the Sota drank. All right, so we explain, called all opinions, how somehow this flour became sanctified. All right, so if she ain't going to drink, we're not going through it. We put the scroll in Seamus, and we burn the mincha that's over there. Now, Shelley's issue. Why don't we use it for another Sota woman? You got a beautiful piece of parchment. Why waste it? The answer, as the Mishnah says, Ve'ein megilasa ksheira lahashkos ba sota cheres. And this Megillah is not kosher to give it to another Sota. Why? Because look at the Pasuk. It says in note 10, it says, the Kohen shall perform for her, thus for her all this law. That's interpreted to mean that the scroll for any given Sota must be written expressly for her, since the scroll written for one Sota is not valid for a different one. It says he does it for her. So that's to be written as part, I guess, the whole, that gives the sacredness to the parchment and everything, is it's done specifically for this woman. You can't just use a standard form, because you can figure, you know what would be a good idea? Let a Kohen write about 10 or 15 parchments. You never know, it's a busy day. You know, what if a guy wants to bring his wife who sold an Erev Pesach? You know, it's like, it's a really busy day. It's just to write it takes time. So then we just pop it out and just, you know, we could do it a lot quicker. But no, it's got to be, here's the case, here's the woman, and I have you in mind as I write it. Therefore, you can't use it for another woman. Okay, so far, we have not yet erased the Megillah. Now what we've been learning before has been Gemaras and not Mishnayos. Now we're coming to the Mishnah. Even though we've discussed this, three opinions on the matter, but it's never brought in the Mishnayic level, which now we're going to see for the first time. Nimcha ga Megillah, what if the scroll was erased into the waters? And, okay, we discussed, okay, va'amrin, at that point she says, Tmeani, I am Tame. Well, if she said, I don't want to drink it, then we force her to drink it. That we learned yesterday and the day before. If we scratch it out and said, I'm not drinking, well, admit your guilt. I'm not admitting. No, then we take the tongs, force it down her. But here, she's admitting. Okay, now remember, we don't give her the water as a point of punishment. The water's only to clarify. She's clarified us a little bit too late. Would have appreciated she would have done it a little earlier. Now what happens to that water? Because the scroll has been already etched out. So there's nothing to talk about the scroll. There's empty parchment. The mincha, according to many opinions, well, the machlok is if mincha has been brought or not, depending on the oleg. But the question is, what do we do with the water now? Right? Hamayim nishpachin. We spill out the water. Right? Okay. No reason to make her drink it. The Mishnah teaches that even though the water, which was taken from the kior and contains God's name in it, it's not considered holy. It may simply be poured out. Right? So, just pour it out. You know, water the grass. Please, just pour it out. It doesn't contain any holiness in it anymore. Just dump it out. According to the opinions that say we bring the mincha before she drinks, or if it was prematurely done, according to the other opinions, chachamim, and what about the mincha, the flour offering? Again, is scattered on the ashes and is burnt. Okay, fine. That's two situations. First situation is we've not yet erased the letters. Second situation is she's erased. We've erased the letters. I don't know why in the first case the Mishnah didn't say that before we erase it, it just says, I'm not going to drink it. What about saying I'm Tmeya? I imagine the answer is like this. Before we erase it, even if she doesn't admit, but just says I'm not drinking, then there's no point in going further, and we'll assume she's guilty. If it's already been scratched out, I'm not drinking isn't good enough. She has to say I'm Tmeya. So that's the difference. Before we scratch it out, even if she says she's not drinking, game over. But once it's scratched out, then the only way game over is if she says I'm Tmeya. Okay, let's go a little bit further. Now we come to the third situation. Nimcha Megillah, the Megillah's been scratched out. Va'amra Eini Shos, she said I'm not drinking. She's not admitting, but she said I'm not drinking. This is what we already learned. Ma'arin also, We force her, umashkina sobachorcha, make her drink it against her will. Okay? Why? Again, we force her to drink because she might be innocent, and refuse to drink only because she's afraid that she will die from the waters, even though she is innocent. Okay? That's why we force her to drink it. Before forcing, however, we attempt to persuade her to drink willingly by assuring her that the waters cannot harm her if she is innocent. You try your best not to force. It's not prompt. The whole thing is disgusting, putting the thing in her mouth like that. Listen, just drink it, because you know we're going to have to force you. Why bother force you? Just drink it, right? So, because why hasn't she said she's guilty? So most likely she's innocent. We want to get the blessings. Okay, Tosfos quotes the Rishalmi, which states that we force her to drink once the scroll is erased because she caused the name to be erased. So that means we force her to drink so that the erasure shouldn't be for nothing. So there's two separate reasons, but we do force her to drink it. Now, how quickly, if she has been violated, how long does it take for the waters to work? Mishnah says, Eina maspekas lishtos. She hardly finishes drinking. It means just as she finishes drinking. Not in the middle. She has to drink the whole thing. So just as she finishes the last drop, and what happens? If she's guilty, atchepone morikos, her face already becomes sallow. I believe that means like greenish. It turns colors from yerek. Yerek is a vegetable that's green. I think morik. So it becomes sallow. I don't know what sallow means, but I think it means the color changes in her face. Veinea boltos, and her eyes start to bulge. Okay? Vihi mismalelas gitin, and her veins start protruding. So we understand, look what it says. After drinking the water, her face and veins in her cheeks swell, making the veins protrude and giving the appearance of her face being covered with veins. So her skin develops swelled ridges. Okay? So, now, it's interesting. It's not so simple over here. Because remember, there's an opinion. One opinion says we bring the mincha first and then she drinks. There's another opinion that says she drinks and then brings the mincha. So looky here. The Gemara below will explain that this Mishnah, which states that the effects of the water immediately followed her drinking, obviously, of course, only with those tanaim hold that she drinks after the mincha is offered. According to those who hold that she drinks before the mincha is offered, however, the water's effects are delayed until offering the mincha. Okay, so this Mishnah is going like the one to say bring the mincha first. So at this point, we know she's going to bust soon. She's going to be dead very soon. Now, it's not a good thing for a dead person to be in the temple. Right? So what happens? So, but we get a little bit of a early warning signals, such as these. Vehem Omrim, and they say, the witnesses, whoever is there, says, listen, Hotzio, get her out of here. Take her out of the temple mount. Shalot titam azara, so that the azara should not be unholt, made tame. Remember, we give it to her at the Nicanor gate, which is in the women's courtyard. So the Mishnah means she's hurried out so that she cannot contaminate the Nicanor gate or the women's courtyard when she's have to be removed, right? So at first glance, the concern would seem to be that her corpse not defile the area. That's what it seems from the Mishnah. We'll discuss it in more detail. Thus, Gemara will ask that the Nicanor gate and certainly the rest of the women's courtyard was never sanctified to the degree that a corpse tomb is excluded. And they should not have to worry. Gemara's going to discuss what's the issue. That's not such a holy part. Okay, anyway, but we say, take her out. Take her out. Now.
Didn't we say it could take quite a long time for the water to take
her out? That's next line. Next line. No, the waters, if she's guilty, immediately start.
Start. The veins.
Now, hold on. But, wait, now the next line is what you were remembering. These are all Mishnahs that we've referenced a couple months ago. Now we're coming to the actual Mishnahs. Gemara's not finished. This is when she's guilty. However, but if she has a merit, then the waters will be deferred. Her punishment would be suspended, would be delayed, as it were. She's going to die, but she has a merit, will delay the punishment. Gemara, on the next page, we'll discuss what things she could have done that were a merit. But if she has a merit, now, yesh schus, there's some merits, toila shana achas, that can delay things for a year. Yeshchus toila beishanim. There are certain merits that can delay things 2 years. Yeshchus toila gimel shanim. There are certain merits that can delay things for 3 years. Okay? Florence kind of a debate what her health is like during these 3 years. She could be. Remember, we learned in Daf Vav that some say she's not well. She slowly deteriorates, machlokas. But the Gemara can't help. But eventually she's going to die. No question about it. She is going to die. The question is, how long is it going to be delayed? Now, based on this idea, now this is very interesting, because what happens? The woman drinks, and nothing happens to her. Now, the woman, she knows the truth. Nobody else knows the truth. So what could be? It could be she's really innocent, and everybody says she's innocent. She certainly, I doubt she's going to drink it, knowing she's guilty, and going, ha-ha, fooled you all. I'm innocent, but I gave tzedakah my whole life, so I'm not going to die for 3 years. Whatever.
But
she drank already, you know. But the point is, we're afraid she's going to get the wrong idea. If she doesn't know this Mishnah, okay, let's say she doesn't know what we just learned. So what is she going to say about the whole sanctity of this whole procedure, if she was guilty?
What's
going on here? The Torah is not true. She's going to go off the derech. Yeah. I mean, if anything that God says in the Torah happens, doesn't happen, you know the Torah is not true. What if all the Jews are in Israel and they're keeping Shemitah and God doesn't give them a triple crop? I'm saying, when there's a Beis HaMikdash and everything, what would happen? The Torah's false. We'd stop. If we really, you know, were in there, so everybody's a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, everybody's going to let the land lay fallow in year 7. Nobody's been saving up. If God doesn't give us a triple crop, we'd stop keeping Judaism. But obviously he's going to do this. So here, she's supposed to die right on the spot, right? Now, she's going to walk away saying, you know, she's going to tell her kids, she's going, you know, I just want you to know, you know, all this stuff in the Torah, you shouldn't believe any of it. What do you mean, mommy? Do we still always believe it? Well, listen, you know, I'm telling you confidentially, I was Tamea, and nothing happened. So we're going to have big problems with keeping the religion. So, because not every lady learns this Mishnah and knows that what these things can happen. Certainly, I don't think the Kohen is informing her of this. The Kohen is trying one thing. Admit your guilt before. And they're pressuring her with so much pressure to drink it. Well, she finally drinks it. And if she's alive, well, the assumption for everybody is that she's okay. And if she wasn't, I doubt she's going to now tell people that she wasn't. But she knows the real truth. So now she'll go off to Derech. Right? Because she's not going to learn this Mishnah. Now comes the next statement. This, I'm setting you up for the next statement. Mikan. From here, from the fact that she could very well not die for 3 years. Now, of course she'll die in 3 years, but for 3 years she can do damage. She can say, nothing happened to me, nothing happened. Ah, Torah's not true. Oh, and then all of a sudden, one day in the third year, she dies. Well, it's a little too late. And she can promulgate all kinds of nasty things. She can move out of town. No, you're going to say, well, you know, people will eventually find out. You know, it's interesting that all these ladies who drink and somehow they die within 3 years, must have been guilty. But what if she moves out of town, which might be a type of thing. So people, you know, it could cause all kinds of problems. So from here, Ben-Azeh says, look at this. Chayiv Adam lalamed es bita Torah. A man is obliged to teach his daughter Torah. Okay? He said, not only is it fitting, but it's obligatory to teach not just his son. It says, v'shinantam levanecha, teach your son. He should teach his daughter Torah too. Why? Shim tishta, because if she drinks and she doesn't die, she might think the Torah is wrong. So she needs to learn some Torah like these Mishnayis, teda sheschus tolo, so she can realize the merit can hold off her punishment in abeyance. So we'll see by studying the laws of Sota that a merit can forestall it. So if she ever commits adultery and is miswords, but does not succumb immediately, she'll not come to call the Torah's truth into question, but rather understand it's just a delay, she's done merits. That's why you got to teach in Torah, so they don't get the wrong ideas of Torah. This is Ben-Azai's opinion, which is sharply argued with by the next opinion, which is like the polar extreme. But what Ben-Azai says, you got it, you're obliged. I don't know if the woman has to learn complicated Gemara like men have to learn, but they got to learn Torah, things that they need to know, and this is one of the things they need to know. Rebbe Eliezer says, I'm going to say the opposite. Kol hamalamed bita Torah, anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, ki ilu, it's as if, but not it is, but it's as if, lomda tiflus, she teaches her about physical intimacy, which means immorality. It's the opposite extent. Literally, the word tiflus means joining together with men. What does this mean? For the study of Torah sharpens her acumen and thus enables her to be secretive about her immoral activities. In other words, Gemara makes you smart. You know, gives you an analytic mind. So she'll figure, you know, she'll use the analytic mind to figure how can I more better secretively rendezvous with men that I won't get caught. Because that's also the other side of the coin of learning Torah. It makes you smart, but sometimes it's a little bit too smart for your own good. So it comes out thus. Whereas Benazeh considers it necessary for father to teach Torah to his daughter, thus it roundly condemns the practice. Now, Rabbi Elazar surely agrees that a woman must learn the myriad halachas that govern so many facets of her life. What he opposes is a man teaching his daughter the theoretical and non-halachic elements of Torah study, which is what Benazeh advocates when he obligates a man to teach his daughter Torah. Interesting, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. That, you know, again, every woman has to learn the Torah she needs to know. She needs to know all the halachas. She needs to know the stories of the Bible. She doesn't have to sit down. She's not allowed. We don't teach them Gemara. They don't need to learn intricacies. Now, again, you want to quote a Gemara where we're saying a Musar, an idea of understanding spiritual development. Certainly a woman can learn that Gemara. We're talking about this Gemara, this that we're learning today, the complexities between different opinions and the sharpening. He says it's forbidden, and that's how we paskin. One should not teach. So most schools are okay with that, but schools that, you know, we'll call more liberal-minded Orthodox schools, or less than Orthodox, feel, you know, we have to make the girls feel inclusive, and they should learn Gemara together with the boys. This is certainly a practice that is not approved of, halach of normativeness. There's plenty of things in the realm of Torah a girl can learn. She can learn Chumash. She can know Tanakh. She could be an expert in Tanakh with Rashi and Mitzudas, and that would take a long time. To learn all of Tanakh would take a long time. To learn what the prayers mean, she can learn all the Musar Sfarim. She can learn everything from Lutzato. She can learn Chovas Halvavas. She can learn, Ramban on the Parsha. There's plenty for women to learn. But Bedavka, to learn Gemara, that complicated type of stuff, analytical stuff, should not be taught.
Does that mean no Gemara?
Like I said, again, there are Gemaras that are story Gemaras, in which we learn lessons from them, yeah. Right? But Pirkei Avos, you can learn Pirkei Avos. But like real Gemara, Kal V'chomer, this and that, all this, the real brain stuff, not because women are not intelligent, but this is...
You say they shouldn't learn it because it teaches them physical intimacy?
In other words,
that's the only reason I've seen it.
Okay, you know, again, one thing you got to know: when the rabbis write things in the Gemara, they reveal a little and they hide a lot more. You have to know that's a rule in Gemara. They reveal a little and hide a lot more. When the Gemara say, for example, you don't take shaves and haircuts a chol hamoed, Gemara says the reason, one reason, but the rabbis understand there's more to what meets the eye. In other words, A woman has to develop the side of her personality of Bina Yisera, not Chochma. There's different aspects that, just like a man is obliged to daven in a minyan, and a woman is not. Right? So a man has to put on tefillin, a woman is not allowed to put on tefillin.
I get all that.
No. So I'm saying, why is a woman not allowed to put tefillin on?
She doesn't need to.
I mean, she doesn't need. What if I bedafka want to? We would discourage it. Rashi's daughters did it. Well, we're not Rashi's daughters. In other words, it that doesn't do anything for you spiritually, and it will be a negative. It'll be a negative. In other words, women need to focus on where the strengths of women. Men need their brains rearranged. Men are extremely arrogant people. Men can be very destructive. That's our nature. We're builders, and we can be destroyers. First of all, it's God. God, he's not saying on his own. He's saying the will of God. The rabbi's not on his own getting up. He's saying men need to work their brains through so that they keep their minds busy on God's holy Torah, that their minds think like Hashem and understand the complexities of Torah and to understand these things. And they will use it in the way it's meant to be used. Women's strength, the Jewish people will not be built up by women scholars in Talmud. The Jewish people will be built up with women who are having lots of children and are guiding women to have children and are focused in that realm of the world and making the practice of Torah, managing the practice of Torah in a practical way in the home, but not to come up with spending hours and hours in the Beis Medrash learning complexities of Torah. This is not how we're going to have the Jewish home reach its completion.
I don't suppose you're going to say that.
If I wanted to, I don't have to worry. None of ladies are interested in that. You know, if you're going to have women opening up yeshivas to learn Gemara, that's going to be the end of the Jewish people. Plain and simple. Here's the problem, you know. Jewish women have one main purpose, is to build the Jewish home. Did anybody think that's not a virtuous thing? Not virtuous. Forget about virtuous. We can't live without it. Correct? It's more important than even making money, making a parnasa. I'm not saying making a parnasa isn't important. But if you have a hierarchy, one or the other, it's one or the other. We make enough money or we have a family. You have a family. Because without a family, there's no Jews. The woman is in charge of making sure there's a proper Jewish family. Now, a proper Jewish family, again, we're not talking about tshuvas. We're talking about people who are starting from the get-go. A Jewish woman's job is to have as many children as Hashem will enable them to have. And with that, it's a full-time job. So, no, I got to go to Beis Medrash and study for 4 hours. This isn't what's going to make the Jewish woman a better mother. Right? She'll learn other things that'll make her a better mother. That's the real pshat. That's the real pshat. The man, he needs to learn a lot of Torah. He needs to be a scholar. He has to bring that aspect of Kedusha into the home. The woman will hear what he's bringing into the home, and she'll apply it into the home. But for her to say, oh, I got to go to yeshiva now. I got to go sit and learn for 2 hours. No, no, no. You got to do homework with your kids. You got to make sure the children are loved.
She's the one who goes to work, so he didn't go to yeshiva.
No, so that's a different story. That's a different story, and the Gemara's not talking about that. That's not the ideal situation. That's not an ideal situation. We have it because wealthy Jews don't want to part with their money and support guys in kol. That's why. Because people have the money say, no, I'm not going to give money for a guy to sit and learn. I want to enjoy my money. I bedafkin on. So now it's a question of the lesser of two evils. Believe me, Shel, there's enough money in this world, Jewish money, to fund every man who seriously wants to learn Torah. There's enough money out there. But we have other priorities, which are not the God's priorities. So Nebuch, now the question is, should we not have people learning Torah? Okay, you have women who are moser nefesh to work, so they're able to, somebody can learn Torah. But that's not in a perfect world. It's agreed, that's not the perfect world. But now the lesser of two evils, should we have nobody learning Torah? Is that better? Without Torah, we're finished. So lesser of two evils is that. But anyway, that's the topic.